Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 161 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, holy cow, a busy week. A lot of things to talk about. Great to see you.
Yeah, man. Good to see you. And I'm still in a bull market, so things are crazy.
Well, it's sometimes hard to believe because everybody's talking about selling Bitcoin and how things are dropping, and shoot, we had what, $3 billion leave crypto last week in ETFs. So yeah, a lot of stuff happening. But let's talk about the Strategic Crypto Reserve that got announced. Right. It's exciting. What's interesting is Trump talked about Cardano, XRP, and Solana before he even mentioned Bitcoin and Ethereum. Of course, Bitcoin and Ethereum are going to be the majority of it, and Bitcoin being probably at least 75%, if not more, right? More info is supposed to be coming this Friday during this crypto summit, which is the first time ever that the White House is putting that on. So a lot is going to be happening and a lot more information to come. I know there's a lot of people that are not happy that there's some other coins included, but I mean, the good news is we have a crypto reserve coming. At least that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. You know, it's funny how quickly people in crypto and Bitcoin adapt, right? We get to around $100,000 Bitcoin, and anything under 95 is now like freaking people out. Like it's going to crash. You know, it's like, it takes like 2 days for everybody to just get acclimated. And it seems like the same thing's happening with the new administration and the new outlook on crypto and Bitcoin, where we're unhappy with crypto and Bitcoin being talked about in the White House and pulling industry people together in Washington, D.C. And, you know, if you told us this last year when everything was like, oh, man, we have all these hurdles, all these regulatory hurdles, and just, you know, choke point 2.0, all this background, you know, backdoor deal crap that's preventing Bitcoin and crypto progress. And then we're a month deep into this, or 6 weeks deep into this administration that's been friendly to it, and we're ticked off because it's not just Bitcoin. And it's like, come on, guys. That's not how this works. So I think you have to accept the victories, even if it's like a lowercase W. That's better than a capital L that we've been seeing the last 4 years.
Well, and that's, I mean, I don't know if I'm entirely excited about a lot of these altcoins being picked too, just because who gets to decide on what the winners are, right? And that's kind of what I feel like is happening right now. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a majority Bitcoin anyway. So whether you like it or not, Bitcoin is going to be the main piece of that. And I mean, shoot, even Brian Armstrong at Coinbase is like, it's either all Bitcoin or it's market weighted. And if it's market weighted, it's what, 76% Bitcoin at this point.
Yeah, I don't see how they could put a whole bunch of funds into any of the altcoin markets, because it's going to jump the price. There's no way around it. I mean, if the U.S. is going to buy a strategic anything, they're not going to buy 50 million or 200 million. You know, it's going to be billions to 10 billions to 100 billion. So I don't know where this. It doesn't upset me. Like, everybody, the first time they get into crypto or Bitcoin, like, they buy mostly Bitcoin, but they can't help themselves, and they got to like put some poker chips on the table for the other stuff. And it's like, it happens to corporations, like it happened to Bhutan, it's going to happen to the United States. So it's just the way it is. And everybody's got to learn their own way, like, that everything else is not as good. And, you know, it'll take 6 months or 2 years or 4 years or whatever. I mean, you're talking to a guy that still owns freaking altcoins from 2017, because I did the same exact thing. I don't know. I feel like a lot of these Bitcoin people forget how they started. There's not a whole lot of Bitcoin people that never bought anything other than Bitcoin. It's not easy to do when you're first getting into this stuff. So no big deal. It's not something I'm going to worry about, especially because this administration is all about talking a whole bunch of stuff and then doing 10% of what they talk about. Like, it just, everything kind of peeled back. So it happens with tariffs, it happens with crypto, it happens with everything. So to me, it's, let's see what actually happens. But the good thing is, something is likely to actually happen, and not either nothing happen or fighting the crypto industry. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and the good news is it's not really just the U.S. I mean, we've talked about what 30 states now have had bills come across their plates. Texas just had their strategic Bitcoin bill pass with a 9-0 vote in the subcommittee. So it's now headed to the Senate floor. Utah still in the lead of all the states, most likely the chance of them passing something first. I think Polymarket even had Texas at over 54% something probability of getting a strategic Bitcoin reserve. So, I mean, it's exciting. We haven't really seen any of the states truly front run the U.S. because neither one, none of them have done anything yet. El Salvador is still in the lead from that perspective. But I mean, it's still, there's a lot of states looking at it, and that's good to see too.
Yeah, I saw the same thing that Texas moved forward. And you know, it makes the most sense for Texas to take the lead here. Even if the strategic reserve at the state level is strictly signaling to the market that they're friendly and that they're supporting the industry, and you know, Texas definitely is, if you look at what they're doing with their power grid and mining and things like that. So I wouldn't be surprised if some states go forward, even if it's just to throw that signal out there. And it's not, you know, let's be honest, I don't expect like a state government to be fully supportive of Bitcoin, but I think you could talk them into, hey, this is the way that we can attract some attention, get some jobs, because some companies can start up, you know, the whole political schmeal of getting things started for reasons other than like deep down, they truly believe that Bitcoin is, you know, freedom money or whatever. Like it's a different sell for the state government stuff, but somebody's going to be the first. And if you would want your state to be the first. We'll see how it goes, but it seems to be moving forward. And I would imagine it accelerates considering, you know, this crypto summit at the White House. I mean, that's a big signal, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of details to it, of course, but I'm excited to see what comes out of it, because it's the who's who of crypto is planning on being there for the most part. And true, there's already been, I mean, so many other things to talk about. I guess we mentioned how Bitcoin had kind of gone down a little bit earlier. Last week, Bitcoin hit 10 on the fear and greed, which
at 80,000, $82,000 and a 10 in maximum fear.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been the lowest it's seen on that since like June of 22. And in June of 22 is much lower than $80,000. I mean, it broke below 80 for a little bit. I think in the 24 hours around that, short-term holders sold $4.6 billion of Bitcoin. So they were scared. And it's like, golly, zoom out a little bit.
Yeah, listen to the people that have been in this longer. We've all seen this. Like, just wait. Like, especially like June of 22, you're talking about the FTX collapse and Three Arrows Capital. And it felt like, oh, crap, we're in a lot of trouble. Like, these dominoes like all just fell apart and the price plummeted. We were in the 60s and now we're in the 20s. And, you know, that was a wildly different place. The government hated it, the whole industry, and it was choking people out. And I mean, it was bad. Fast forward to now, Bybit had a hack. That's the problem. There was an Ethereum Bybit hack. And that's like the what everybody's kind of the blaming this bull run correction on. I'm like, come on, man. I mean, if you go back and listen to this podcast in January when we did predictions, I said it only closed in the 80,000s for 6 days. I said there's a real good chance we're going to go back into the 80s to close that gap. Here we are, right? It's a bull run. You get 20-30% corrections, and then it pops back up. I mean, this is like super classic, and I don't feel anything that says 108's the top and here we are, we're going to live in this, you know, trading range in the whatever $50,000 to $70,000 trading range like we did all year last year. If you think we're in the same place we were last year, like, you're crazy. So what are we doing? Like, just all you have to do, it's so easy to listen to the people that are into Bitcoin for a long time, where you just buy Bitcoin, then you don't mess with it for 4 years.
Well, so Bitcoin in its history has dropped more than 20% over 130 times. I mean, it's one of those, I don't know if you've ever seen that video of the guy saying, oh yeah, Bitcoin went up to here and came back to here. Everybody called it dead. I mean, it's been called dead so many times. In 2017 alone, there were five of 28% or more pullbacks in that Bitcoin run, right? And all of them were just noise, right? So it almost, it's going to happen. Welcome to volatility. With volatility in Bitcoin comes some huge returns. Get used to it. Buy more when it happens, because it's going to be an amazing opportunity for you. So just have some firepower on the side that you can pull the trigger on when things like this happen.
Yep. I mean, it's very classic Bitcoin, and everybody acts like it's not. Everybody acts like it's the first time they've seen it. And I guess, I don't know if you get clicks for doing that. I don't know, but it doesn't make any sense to think that this is it, right? You've got the cycles, the halving cycles, and this is the year where things kind of go hyperbolic, and, you know, but towards, you know, fall of this year, that's when kind of things will come to an end and all this other stuff. Okay. So you check there. The ETFs are in play. There's, you know, friendly government stuff. You got countries that are in, I mean, you know, it's not just El Salvador, Bhutan, and, you know, the UAB, and like, we're just chill out. Don't stop trying to sell your Bitcoin. Like, just wait. So I don't know why. I don't know why that this one happened. Like, to me, it didn't make enough sense to have this big of a drop, but for all I know, this is like, I mean, maybe whales can't manipulate the market as easily as they could, because you know, we're at $2 trillion. So it would be tougher to move things, but I don't know. I normally think that price moves and then people try to figure out some news thing to justify it when for some reason some people are selling. I don't think that there's anything in the news that would justify like a scared sell-off like this.
Well, I don't think it's crypto specific, right? I mean, all the tariffs that are going on in the U.S. has all That's the true. Markets scared to death, right? So it's not like crypto is the only one seeing some sort of negative downturn. Everybody's seeing it. It's just crypto, as we've seen in the past, is way more liquid. So if you want to do it on a Sunday, you can do that with crypto. You can't do that with the rest of the markets. So I understand people are scared. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know. I'm just surprised. If you're a short-term holder, it's just kind of a red flag that you're selling so quickly, because at the end of the day, we're still going up. And once we get to the millions of dollars per Bitcoin, then we might not be as volatile. But right now, we still got hopefully a couple cycles left before we get to that and start seeing some volatility calm down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, just based on this, I feel like volatility is just built in, and it's not going to, maybe it'll dampen some, but I don't think we get away from this for a long time. I mean, there's no reason for anybody to be like to panic right now, but here we are. I feel like we went down $10,000 one day and then went back up $10,000 one day. Like that's not logical trading behavior. Like, we'll see what happens.
Well, let's talk about the SEC. We've been talking a lot about them, and there's some interesting things they've talked about that is super bullish. One, they dropped more suits. So Kraken, MetaMask, Gemini, OpenSea, Yuga Labs. I think we mentioned Robinhood and Uniswap already. I mean, this is literally all the U.S. American companies that were focused on crypto that are the who's who companies. SEC was going after them, and now they've said, all right, we're dropping all these lawsuits. You're good to go. Yuga Labs came out and said NFTs are not securities per Yuga Labs after a three plus year lawsuit with the SEC. The SEC ruled that meme coins aren't securities either. They're akin to collectibles. Although the Democrats are trying to pass this Meme Act. I don't know if you heard about this, but they're making it illegal for high ranking government officials and spouses and dependent children from creating and promoting meme coins. And they're going to retroactively punish those that already have. So they're literally just trying to do something to go after Trump, which I understand the idea of doing this, but it's kind of like, if you're trying to go after the president of the United States, there's no way that's ever going to get passed. Why don't you say moving forward, let's not do this? Although I don't even know if I agree with that anymore. If people want to buy a collectible that someone offers, great. That's your mistake for doing something stupid like that.
Passing a law that's retroactively impacting people, like people perform an action that's legal, and then you 2 months later create a law that says it's illegal, and then you go get them for the legal act that they performed 2 months ago. That's not something that anybody in America should be okay with. Like that's a wild thought to have, as far as, oh, all we have to do is if we don't like somebody enough, we can pass a law 2 months later and put them in jail. this is not, that's not a good thing. But as far as like having restrictions to kind of, you know, it's like insider trading or these other things where, you know, it's like, hey, you can't use your government elected position to enrich yourself. It's like, I'm okay with that. So that's different. But like going forward, let's do that. But like going backwards is a bad idea.
Well, the problem was that insider trading, it would make sense if they did something with that, because right now everybody in Congress is doing it. I mean, you even got like the Nancy Pelosi tracker that people are making 60%+ a year just following her trades. And she now has a net worth of over $220 million from her $170,000 a year salary in Congress. Like, something doesn't add up there.
Yeah, her husband's just a really good stock trader.
Yeah, so the other things that I did see, the House is going to vote on repealing the burdensome IRX crypto tax rule for DeFi companies. Now, if this passed, it would have to be approved by the Senate and by Trump. Although I think there's another version of this that Ted Cruz did in the Senate that just passed that's going to go to Trump's desk here shortly, that his advisors are saying they're going to sign off on. So I'm not sure what the difference is between the two, but I have a feeling they've decided that the last minute change that Biden put through right before he left about making DeFi collect all this information, which is almost impossible to do, is going to get reversed and keep innovation in the U.S. and not push it outside the U.S.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the idea there, is to undo some of that excess regulation and things like that. I mean, all the way down to like, if you own a business or LLC, you had to register as all the managing members had to provide their information and a picture of their license and all that stuff, which I thought, well, there's like no reason to do this, right? There's more LLCs than people in the United States, and it's not like the IRS has all the time in the world to figure this stuff out. I'm like, this is dumb. I almost didn't do it, but then like in December, I'm like, okay, I guess I'll do it. And then like 2 weeks later, they're like, well, we're not going to penalize you $10,000 like we said. And then like this week, they're like, yeah, we don't care. We're not going to do that. I'm like, of course you're not. It's just like the $600 a year through eBay stuff, like where you're going to get, it's all reported in text. Like, and they can't keep up with this stuff. Right. If you're Venmo, everybody has a Venmo, is going to be over $600, because $600 is a lunch a month. Like, yeah, paying somebody back for lunch every month it puts you over the top. So like, why are we tracking de minimis that values like this? It doesn't make sense. And whenever there's some dumb onerous thing that the government pushes, they seems like they claw it back. So here we are.
Yeah. The interesting thing that I saw too, from a Senate perspective, is there's a couple of guys, I'm assuming they're both guys, Tom Emmer, who's a Republican, and Richie Torres, who's a Democrat, that are creating the Congressional Crypto Caucus. So it is a group of senators that are going to be a unified voting block to help bolster the U.S. leadership in digital assets. And I mean, that's exciting to see both sides of the fence working together to try to promote digital assets and the U.S. leadership there.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, I'm not pulling for the government to screw up crypto and Bitcoin, but in order for it to go where it's going to go, we've got to go through the government. And so here we are. I'm ready for it.
And then Bank America was in the news. They are planning to launch a stablecoin if the stablecoin legislation goes through. So once again, everybody's scared about crypto in general, and the largest banks in the world are trying to get involved.
No, I mean, if you just pay attention, you know, like it's not just, it's like every few days you get more and more release of like, you know, these banks are looking at how to custody crypto. These banks are holding it on their balance sheet. It's like, pay attention, you know, these are the guys that are going to make the legislation happen anyway. So once they get onto the right side of things, then things are going to go forward.
Speaking of legislation happening, so Patrick McHenry was the financial services chair previously, and he retired from Congress, and he has joined Andreessen Horowitz, their A16Z, as a senior advisor on how to get things done. And I think a lot of it's around digital assets. So once again, flip-flopping from public to private very easily, happens all the time these days.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But that's why banks have favorable stuff. And that's why, like, the FDA works the way it works, because they, everybody profits off of their position, and then they get all the connections on the public side, and then they go work for a private company and grease the wheels. So like, it's finally happening for crypto and Bitcoin. This is the way it, it's just the way the system works. So it's good that it's happening in the way that it's has been for other industries, for the crypto industry. So it's not like I'm in love with it, but this is the path that has to be taken. Like, whether it's 2025 or 2030, like we gotta dip in. And then, like, most often when Bitcoin gets into something, like the first time it happens, it like makes a charge into an alley, and then it retracts and like backs out, like it goes too far too fast and then slows back down. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have the same kind of thing where, you know, we're 6-8 weeks into this thing and we're having a crypto summit and all this stuff. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if in the summer we just don't hear anything from the government about crypto. It's like, okay, we learned a lot. We need to take a breath. Maybe we get into a strategic reserve, and then the price declines and we got to regroup. Like, yeah, it's the same thing that happens every time. So like, we're in that first initial surge and where people get educated, and then they get like the true hard knocks education when the price drops, or, you know, something, you know, there's some nefarious thing that they got to peel back a little. And then 3-4 years later, it's like, oh yeah, this is just normal operating procedure. This is just business as usual.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things with that strategic crypto reserve. It was more of just a former committee to figure out what to go do. So I don't think there's here any hard lines what's going to happen. So I agree with you. I mean, in a couple of months, this summer could be just dead. Right, not hearing anything out of anybody, and theoretically work is going on behind the scenes, but who knows, anything can happen at that point.
Oh yeah.
So Vietnam was in the news here recently too. Kind of out of nowhere, they decided they needed to have a crypto framework done, and they're planning on having it done this month. If you look at Vietnam as a country, they are 7th globally in their rate of crypto ownership. So they're way up there. I think they're trying to make sure they probably don't make the same mistake that countries like Nigeria made and threw everything out of whack and no one trusts them and all that kind of good stuff. So I'm excited to see what happens. I mean, that's kind of a quick turnaround and about a month to come up with something. But hey, if you're a country, why wouldn't you want to be a first mover and get ahead of everybody else and theoretically be a much bigger player in the future compared to a lot of other countries out there?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take long studying Bitcoin to realize that whoever's early benefits the most, and all you have to do is buy and wait. And the first person to buy and start waiting is leading the race. So I would, to watch like what's going on with El Salvador, where, you know, they're 4+ years into their initial investment. They've been dollar cost averaging almost every single day, a Bitcoin a day. And, you know, it's working exactly the way it's supposed to. Price goes up, adoption goes up, your holdings increase in purchasing power, and that's how you kind of fight inflation with the asset allocations. And of course, they just signed a deal with the IMF, and that looks like they're gonna, the language in the document looks like that they have to back off on their Bitcoin acquisition. And but then Bukele tweeted that no, it's not stopping. So I don't know. Like, we talked about this IMF deal with El Salvador, and it looked negative. And they went from like compulsory acceptance of Bitcoin at businesses to voluntary and things like that. So we'll see what happens. Like I said, there's always that initial surge and then a pullback in Bitcoin adoption. And so maybe that's what this is, or maybe not. Like, who knows?
Well, I mean, being in Bitcoin for so long, right? I think it's not ideal to force it on somebody. You almost have to kind of take your time and learn and play around with it. What El Salvador did is kind of said, you're going to accept Bitcoin whether you like it or not. They've had to step back away from that and said, okay, it's not required. But for them getting that much money, from what I understand, most of their plan is just to go back and turn all that into Bitcoin. So, which will be way more, I mean, what, 2 or 3x from what they have today. Right. So, I mean, it's kind of smart. They're doing what they need to do to bolster their entire country and their economy while still playing the game of getting free money to people like the IMF.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the guys like Bukele, I mean, it's not like he's all of a sudden not going to be a Bitcoin guy. You know, he was a Bitcoin guy before he was president.
Yeah. So speaking of Bitcoin, Fidelity and Voltage came out with their Lightning report, which is kind of interesting. The total capacity for Lightning in US dollars is up over 2,700% since 2020. In Bitcoin percentage, it's only up like 384%, because of course the Bitcoin has not been nearly as bad as US dollars, but that, I mean, that's exciting to see. And what's crazy is Nostr, which is the world's largest Bitcoin circular economy, 6 million individual sats in the last 6 months using the Lightning Network. So there's a lot of usage going on, and this is definitely increasing, and still, I mean, it's still new for a lot of people, right? There's probably a handful of people that you know that have used the Lightning Network or even know what it is.
Yeah, but I will tell you this, the Lightning Network and looks, feels, acts from a user standpoint exactly like Venmo or PayPal or whatever, scan a QR code and then it goes across and you're done. So I think you got it. I think Lightning is doing a good job of making that user interface for using Bitcoin to be way smoother, easier than the private keys and all that. Now, it doesn't have the security, and we can go down that road all day, but you don't need maximum security if you're going to spend giving somebody $20, you know, as you're buying a used article off of Facebook sale or something.
But I mean, I'm assuming most people out there aren't putting all of their savings in PayPal and Venmo and storing them there, right? It's a small percentage of it that you transfer there when you need to use it. And yeah, move it away when you don't. I mean, I don't keep a lot of it in there. So if I do, I put it in crypto. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those. Yeah, I agree with you. It's the security piece is important, but it's a small percentage of your overall crypto balance. You're not keeping it all there, so you should be good.
Right. Yeah, the security of the cash I hold in my wallet is pretty low. The security of my checking account is higher. Like, it's just the natural progression of things.
So I did see ETH Denver is happening right now. It's, I think, the largest ETH conference is still free. It's been going on for quite some time. But there's a couple of announcements that have come out of that. The one that was most interesting to me was that Ethereum was funding ZKNOX, which is a company that is seeking to develop advanced cryptography for the ETH ecosystem so that the chain remains secure in the event of a quantum computing breakthrough. I mean, we talked about this a while ago, that quantum computing is still a decade or more away before it starts to break some of the cryptography on crypto, but everybody's trying to plan on how to deal with it when the time comes. And that's exciting to see what they're doing. I mean, I've been saying for a long time, I think ZK zero knowledge proofs are going to be a big piece of the future. And here's another company that's working with ZK technology to make sure quantum computing isn't an issue.
Yeah, I think the more we talk about quantum and the more people understand that it's not that easy to break on the crypto side, and it's not like the silver bullet that brings down crypto, because you can play defense with quantum as easy as you can play, easier than you can play offense. You know, that's fine with me. Let's keep talking about it until I stop hearing that. What about what happens when quantum computing breaks Bitcoin? I'm looking forward to not having to hear that anymore.
Yeah. So the Trump Organization was also in the news. They filed a patent for the Trump Metaverse. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not see that.
You can go get an avatar and Trump merchandise in the Metaverse. And who knows what's going to happen, because it's just the patent coming out. But I mean, the Metaverse tokens, what, 3-4 years ago, kind of took off. Will it come back? Who knows? If you watch Ready Player One, yeah, we're all going to live in the Metaverse here in a few years. But it's kind of crazy that this continues to happen, where the Trump Organization is very involved in crypto in general.
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard Metaverse in a while. Like, the Facebook Metaverse seems to have just kind of been put on the shelf.
Yeah, I mean, AI has definitely taken the focus, and Metaverse has not been talked about much at all. But I still think that in the future it will come back. We're still a ways away from that, though.
Yeah.
There was also some speculation going on a MetaMask airdrop with their Mask token. So there is a decentralized exchange, Logix, that apparently started trading or pre-trading this token, and everybody went crazy, and the value of it jumped up so high it was going to be like a $4 billion market cap or something crazy. And Consensus has come out and said, we have no plans for an airdrop. So whatever's going on, that's not real. I think Coinbase was even looking at listing it on their pre-trading thing too. So don't buy Mask. It's not real yet. I don't know if it ever will be, but It is not the MetaMask token that is planning on coming out.
Gotcha.
GameStop was also in the news. They are possibly going to be following Strategy's footsteps. They have about $5 billion in cash sitting on hand. And the same investment firm that Vivek works at has been pushing them to put it all in Bitcoin. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. If you look at the X page of the CEO from GameStop, he follows, I think, three things, and two of them are Bitcoin related, and one of them is GameStop. So he's very much paying attention to Bitcoin. I mean, GameStop has been in the news for quite some time, but if they put $5 billion into Bitcoin, holy cow, would that kind of cement their legacy for the future and becoming a big player in the market on whatever they want to do at that point?
Well, I mean, it would open up a lot of doors for them. I mean, they're a zombie company anyway. So the Bitcoin on the balance sheet seems to be a little life extender for companies like that. So you start doing that, and then, but the volatility of GameStop would go back up. And so the options market would open back up, and it would drive a lot of stock price escalation. And, you know, I mean, that's the goal of a company is to increase shareholder value. So that would be doing it. If you're holding $5 billion in cash, you shouldn't. You should. That's not a good way to use. Exactly. Like, I mean, if you're in short-term treasuries, I guess at least you can kind of justify that. But like, how long can you justify doing that?
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if they start doing pretty much the same thing Strategy is doing and following in their footsteps, because there's still, I think, a lot of money to be accumulated that way. And I mean, it theoretically could be a great thing for GameStop moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, the convertible note bond market is not tapped. So there's the money out there.
So Grayscale was also in the news recently. They just applied for a Polkadot ETF. I know we talked a week or two ago that staking for Polkadot was back at some of these exchanges. Now we're possibly going to see an ETF. The SEC seems to be approving them left and right. So, I mean, good to see. I think Polkadot is still one of those projects that a lot of people will utilize some of the stuff behind the scenes for what they're doing. I mean, most people don't go to Polkadot directly, but a lot of different projects are kind of built on top of Polkadot, just like Ethereum is. A lot of things are built on top of Ethereum. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it.
The other kind of crazy thing that I saw, I don't know if you remember Kronos, which is crypto.com's chain, the Crow token. So a few years ago, I think back in 21, they burned like 70% of their tokens. So they had 100 billion, they burned 70 billion and brought it down to 30 billion. They are wanting to bring back that 70 billion that they burned. So they're trying to vote on that. It's going to theoretically give them $5 billion of cash to work with. They want to turn that into a strategic reserve that's vested over 10 years. Right now, 86% of the people have opposed it. I think the voting is open for another like almost 2 weeks or just under 2 weeks. But it is crazy to see after you burn 70% of your supply, now you want to bring it back. That just is mind-boggling to me.
So this is where I talk about why Bitcoin's better. I mean, so the funny thing is, man, it's like when my understanding of when you burn tokens is it went into a wallet that was a dead wallet that either, there's like no way out, right? I mean, that's the confidence that you have that when those things are burned, they don't come back and they don't dilute you when you're a holder of that whatever token. But if they can be like, let's unburn these, I'm like, man, there's just no rules.
Well, to me, it's almost, I don't know if they unburn that. They just print 70 billion more and change the code. Like in Bitcoin, you can't do that. That's not possible. With a lot of these other ecosystems, that's possible, right? You can modify some things and change it. So they would have to definitely modify some things and change it. But I don't know why anyone would be excited about that.
No, I mean, all you would be is that, like if crypto.com gets to hold a 70 million tokens, why would everybody else be cool with that?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll see what happens with that. We haven't really talked about WorldCoin in a while, or I should say World now. They've rebranded to World instead of WorldCoin. They now have a competitor, Billions.network. They are launching a privacy-focused digital ID. Once again, they're using ZK technology rather than biometrics, so you don't have to scan your iris. They originally as Polygon ID, but then they have expanded into kind of a much more broad verification network. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with them. I mean, I already like the sound of it, not scanning your iris to justify whether you're a person or not. And they don't store anything. It's all the ZK technology, so none of your data really is stored or known. So exciting to see. We'll see kind of where it goes, but it's probably still early on from that perspective too.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth keeping an eye on. I mean, like I said, some of this stuff's going to pan out. They got to try different things.
So I know there's a ton of other things that I didn't talk about. What else on your plate that you wanted to mention for this week?
Well, over last week, there was like this report that the U.S. Marshals was struggling to estimate their Bitcoin holdings. And it's one of those stories that on the surface, I want to believe that that's true, like, because that's just the way, that's my opinion of government. But on the flip side, it's like every time that the government wallets make a move, it's all over Twitter because they know what wallets are theirs. And so I don't think that that story was ever confirmed or validated by another source. And it just doesn't make much sense to me. So, but it's like, yeah, I mean, on the surface, when I first read it, I'm like, I think that checks out. Like that's how dumb this whole government custody of Bitcoin, that's how dumb it is. Like they don't, it's not like the U.S. Marshals strategically developed this holding of Bitcoin or crypto and like went through the process of figuring out how to best do it, you know, for an organization that size. They acquired it through confiscation and just had to deal with it that way. So anyway, I'm not buying it. I haven't seen that story validated, but it's pretty funny that it's like, it's pretty believable until you think about it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's almost like the simple thing is just call Coinbase because they're holding it for you and ask them how much is in there, right? If most people at U.S. Marshals probably don't understand what a crypto wallet is. So they're like, oh, I don't know how to verify it. And just open up your wallet, tell you exactly right. How much it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other story I saw, you know, whenever the price starts to dip, then like the small negative stories come out. So the Swiss National Bank, I guess the leader of that bank dismissed the calls to hold Bitcoin. Okay. You know, like everybody says no before they say yes. So that's where they are.
Well, I think the European Central Bank has been telling everybody there's no way Bitcoin's going to be a strategic reserve asset based on their views. Although the Czech Republic is the only one that's trying to fight that. And I think they have an uphill battle just with some people in their own country, right? But it's going to be one of those, the first movers in Europe is going to take advantage of everybody else. You already know Germany doesn't want to do it. They sold all theirs. So who's the next country that's going to step up?
Yeah, and it's not like the European Central Bank's never made a mistake, never been wrong. So, you know, why would you listen to them if you're trying to look out for yourself? So, you know, it doesn't take much. You know, it's like on the states, it's like, well, all we need is one of these states to put it on their balance sheet and it makes a difference. Like, we didn't have to say that for the countries. It's like, we already have countries that are doing it. It's already working out for them. Other countries are going to have to do it. And if the United States does it, give me a break, right? And like, honestly, if once the United States does it, it's not too late, but it is not early anymore. Like, you need to front run the United States.
Well, when we've talked about it, it's once the United States does it, it's not just other countries that jump on. It's states and counties and towns and everything, right? So the multiplier effect of that is just insane. So, I mean, where we were talking about 250 plus Bitcoin this cycle, that gets multiplied by another factor, right?
Yes.
If that happens soon. So, yeah, it's exciting. So there's a lot of good things happening in this market right now. And even with all the negative price movement and other stuff that's going on, you can't not be excited about the future of crypto and Bitcoin right now.
I agree.
Well, cool. Well, let's leave it there then. And man, next week we'll be talking about the strategic crypto meeting and what came out of that. So I'm excited to see what happens. And shoot, we might even have a strategic reserve by then next week.
Yeah, that's what they said. Like, the rumor is maybe that it's going to happen. I doubt it, because we're still in, like, then they're like a 90-day evaluation or 180-day evaluation thing. So, but at the same time, man, the strategy, if you are going to create a Bitcoin strategic reserve for the United States, the number of strategies that would be floated around brainstorming as to how to go about acquiring the Bitcoin without spiking the market. And then once you have the Bitcoin that you want, how to announce it so that it, you know, it does elicit a response from everybody else. Like, there's a lot to think about. And if you go in there and blindside them, that might be a strategy worth thinking about. Yeah.
Well, if you come out and say, we didn't find any money in Fort Knox, so we're just going to put a bunch of money in Bitcoin.
Yeah, here are the wallets. You can verify it.
Awesome. It should be fun. How great talking to you. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.